right, and welcome everyone to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm Ant Tessitore, a writer of flavor text and names for Wizards of the Coast, and also an article writer at Gathering Magic. And with me we have Mike Linneman, but also we have a very special guest today. We have winner of the Great Designer Search 2, Ethan Fleischer.
Hello.
We just found out from Ethan, pre-interview, that he is indeed 6'6" tall. Amazing fact to start off the day.
That's true. I look a lot smaller on the internet.
Everyone does. I mean, like we said, if you stand next to Mark Rosewater, you don't know what the scale is. I mean, it could be a giant banana or a tiny banana. We don't know.
It's true.
Fair.
He wouldn't allow a banana of any size to stand next to him.
That's true. I think, so what I want to know is if evil twin Mauro, he must be all about bananas, right? Bananas have to be his favorite.
Oh, yeah, he loves them. Okay. The man is radioactive with potassium.
Just Laffy Taffy bananas, all the things. Got it.
So what we wanted to do today is, today is our holiday episode. And we thought, you know, what better way to talk about holiday flavor than to discuss the holiday cards that get put out each year for Wizards employees. And as a special treat, we brought Ethan on to the episode today because I knew that he has contributed to the design of at least one of these cards. So in having him here, we kind of have an inside expert on exactly what goes into kind of like the planning and design of these flavorful holiday cards.
Yeah, I've been involved in at least to some degree with every holiday card that's come out since I started working here. So that would be from Yule Ooze on to the present.
And for those of us like who don't know, when exactly did you start at Wizards?
Oh, let's see. I think I started in 2011.
So that would have been what set?
Let's see. That was right before New Phyrexia came out. Yep. Was when I started.
Cool. So he basically got started up when, you know, Magic was exploded post-Zendikar, where it's like, oh crap, fetch lines are expensive again. And then,
yep.
And then boom, present day Magic, get after it.
Right.
That's right. Everything just took a sharp uptake as soon as I got there.
Which was absolutely due to you, right? That was all you.
I'm sure.
Just perfectly relational. I'm sure there's a PowerPoint deck at work that you're like, Ethan started? Ethan still works.
Yeah, like a graph. There's a line graph that just says before Ethan arrived at Wizards and then after, and it's just a sharp exponential just skyrocket in sales.
Basically.
Yeah. Love it. Well, let's talk about this flavor gems. We always start off with flavor gems. Ant loves his flavor text. Funny ones, not so much. Not his jam.
No. I like funny flavor text.
Okay.
I just don't like when it's used inappropriately.
Okay, fine. You can mix your Haterade strong, some more beats. I'm an art guy. I like pretty pictures and ones that make sense. And anything by Donato. Please make more art with him. He's great.
Oh, God, he's so good.
I know, right? He's so good. But I'll go first with this. I'll kick it off. Make it easy.
No, hold on. Let's let our guests go first. Let's be good hosts and let our guests go first.
All right. He can go in uncharted waters. No idea. Just dive in.
All right. I think I can do that.
All right. Go ahead. What's your holiday card?
My holiday flavor gem is Yule Ooze. The reason I chose this is because this is literally a flavor gem, because the rules text instructs you to eat some food. So this is one of the few Magic cards that engages your sense of taste and your sense of smell. I think it's a very funny card. I love the art in it. It's like a still life from a Dutch master or something. But it's subverted because the food is eating another piece of food, which is subtly terrified. And so that's, I think, the source of the humor in this.
Best
and, of course, it has some flavor text also. We always try to squeeze flavor text in on our holiday cards. And you can see there's some little human bones inside that Jell-O. So it's a little macabre.
Oh, yeah. Steve Prescott's really great with adding some details in there.
Yeah.
Into his larger pieces. And I just like the wackiness of it. Of course, it's going to be another one. Of course, it's going to be at random. Why wouldn't it be?
Is this considered cannibalism, I guess, because it's food eating food?
I don't know. I mean, Jell-O is made from what, like horse's hooves or something? And that's a pig, so it's probably okay.
Yeah, that's true. It's not like direct. Unless it was Jell-O made from pig's hooves, then this would be a pig byproduct ooze eating a pig, which in fact would be cannibalism.
Man, that takes it to a whole new chilling level.
Yeah. They might have that in Portland as a hipster option. They probably had bacon to it
Pig
too.
Jell-O?
No,
You
I
know.
didn't know. I lived there for 10 years and I never saw any pig jello, but you know,
Well, that was some
maybe they didn't pay me enough to afford such delicacies.
Now, Ethan, you actually had a hand in designing that activation, right? If I remember correctly.
Yes. Eat some food was my idea. We always try to like put something into the holiday card to justify its silver bordered nature from a design
Right.
standpoint. So we try to put something that we wouldn't normally do in regular black bordered magic. So in this case, we would never make you eat food as part of the activation ability of a normal magic card. That's just not something we want to force people to do like in a tournament or something. So it felt like an appropriate thing to do here because that's what's happening on the in the art.
It's good. And I
Maybe
like
I
how
should
shows
talk about
this.
the process. You want me to talk about the process now, or should we go through the rest of the flavor gems
We you
first?
could do it now. We probably should have done it before, but
Nope.
that's fine. We can
Nope. Do it
do it
live.
now.
Do
This
it
is even
live.
better. We're doing it
All right,
live.
we can do it. All right, so I guess I'll talk about this particular card since it's in front of the screen on me right now. So what we do is we usually start with a name. We have a huge list of puntastic magic card names,
Awesome.
and we usually pick one that we think has some potential, and we give it to the art team, and they commission a piece based on that name.
Awesome.
And where do those
And
names
then
come
once
from?
the art comes back, oh, just anybody at Wizards of the Coast can add things to the list.
How
If they
big is
come up
this
with a good
list?
idea, well, there's maybe 30 or 40 things on it right now. Some of
Okay.
them are pretty terrible. Some of them are really funny, and we're looking for an opportunity. And some of them are considered inappropriate by our brand team, and will probably never see the light of day.
Do you think LSV could do freelance flavor text writing for name and holiday cards? As
It
they are
seems like
pun related.
he'd be really good at it.
I know, right?
So once the art comes back, then all of the core designers, so that's Mark Rosewater and Mark Gottlieb, and all of the other designers, Ken Nagel and Sean Main, myself. Right now we have Ben Hayes and Jackie Lee and Gavin Verhey are part of the design team. And so we all get together, we have a weekly meeting, and then we spend one or two of those meetings designing cards to match the art and the name that we've already decided upon. And then after that's done, we see how much room there is for flavor text, and that kind of goes out to all of R&D, the creative department, design development. Everybody sort of comes up with ideas, and somebody or other picks the best one and puts it on the
Awesome.
card.
Now, is it play tested at all beforehand, or do you just kind of assume that it's going to be fun?
No, we just run it by the developers to see if it's got an appropriate mana cost or if there's something we've overlooked, but we don't play test it.
Okay, so this card, for an example, red and a green, eat some food, regenerate, you'll ooze. Have you ever activated it 3 times in one turn?
Oh my God, there's no way I could do that. No, I never have. And if the game goes long, it's going to get harder and harder to activate.
Right.
You just run out of food. Like, can you leave? Can you make more food? I don't know. Probably.
Well, yeah, I
Yeah, I
guess there's no
mean.
time limit on that, right? And it's already been established that in Silver Borderland, chewing gum doesn't count, right? Like, you can't sit there and
Right,
chew
right.
gum.
Chewing gum is not considered to be eating food for the purposes of this card.
I like how it says eat some food and not target food, because that could just be shenanigans.
Oh, that would have been amazing. For like
Yeah,
eat target food, opponent.
I don't know. For some reason, I just like the way that sounded. Eat some food. Just
Just
yeah,
whatever.
it
my
is. It's
tongue
nice and
popping.
ambiguous and just.
You can choose what is and what isn't food. That's
Yeah.
fine.
So what do you got for us, Mike?
All right, so I actually did backwards research on this. Have you ever used the backwards Google search where you throw the picture in and try to find images that are stylistically similar?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's the coolest thing. I use it on things all the time. I do it with my wiener dogs every now and then just to see, like, wiener dog art. It's amazing.
I didn't know where you were going with that, Mike.
Yeah, it could have gone anywhere.
It could have gone crazy.
Got a little weird. But I threw this in there, and looking through these, and I'm like, oh, I know what this is. So the card is Gifts Given, and it is basically Gifts Ungiven, switched up a little bit. So you look up in an opponent's library for different cards, and then, you know, you take that. And then the art is similar to the D.A. Alexander Gregory piece, and of course Vulcan Baga made a new one with Realms Uncharted of this same reclining woman playing with the toy or playing with the thing. And I see this art, and I want this cycle to be completed so freaking bad, because it's this art history term called the reclining woman, and you can Google search that all day. It's basically naked women in the 16th, 17th centuries. On blankets, eating a grape, doing whatever they have to do, and it's a thing for students to practice human form and still lifes and such. But to see this art of a, why is it blue for a holiday card? I'm like, oh man, I just want to see the other colors doing exactly this thing, just to see how different artists can interact with it and see other designs of. What is this in red? What would this be in multicolor?
Oh, in red it would have to be a female goblin. I mean, obviously, right?
Well, they have them now. Ankle Shanker.
That would be
there.
Amazing.
Totally want to see that. And I would kill to see if that's in a hidden file underneath a wizard's desk to say, oh, we're going to finish this cycle. We're not telling anybody about it for like 12 years.
I do like when they used to do that a lot more. I feel like in the older sets where they would have these large overarching cycles that would be completed through, you know, 5-6 sets. Like one that comes to mind would be like the ATOG cycle. I think that
sure.
I think that took like 4 or 5 sets, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's a question for Ethan. Is there any lingering cycles that you haven't finished but you'd love to?
Oh, so you know, in the original Commander set, there was a card called, what was it, Sewer Nemesis.
Sure.
And then in the second Commander set, we had True Name Nemesis.
Yep.
And nobody at Wizards, I think, realized that we had started a cycle. It was a total coincidence that there were these two cards, both called Nemesis, and both of which had the rules text, choose a player. So there's a cycle. And everyone was disappointed that I didn't put a new nemesis in Commander 2014. And so maybe someday we could work on that cycle.
You were too busy putting a whole bunch of good Vorthos content into Commander, so that's fine.
Well, you know, I gotta, you know, please everyone, right?
Absolutely.
You put all the taste in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was such a... When I saw Felden, I was just so... So happy.
Oh, me too.
I honestly thought it was a joke article. I really did.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was like, oh, my God, there's like an unglued thing coming, or there's someone took over an article. And I'm like, no. This doesn't happen anymore. Don't give me that. And then I got sent it to someone else at work. And they're like, no, Mike, this is real. And I just lost it. Just lost it.
Well, yeah, I mean... I loved Time Spiral, and I love especially the legendary creatures in Time Spiral.
Right.
You know, some people really experience the storyline of Magic through the books or you know, ways like that. But for me, my primary way of experiencing Magic has always been through the cards. And so seeing all these characters that I'd seen in flavor text brought to life as Magic cards was really exciting to me. So I wanted a chance to do something similar.
Right.
Awesome. Ant, what do you got for us? What's your flavor?
All right. So for mine, I'm going to look at Stalking Tiger, which was, I think this was last year's, right? 2013? Yes.
Yep.
This was last year's card. So Stalking Tiger, it's an artifact creature, enters the battlefield. You put a sealed magic booster underneath it, and then it has a saboteur ability where if it deals damage to a player, then you get to open that booster pack and put it into your hand. Not one card, like Booster Tutor. You just get to take the whole pack and jam it into your hand, which feels just like Christmas. It says, just hope yours isn't full of coal golems as its flavor text. And for those listeners who might not know, there is a holiday tradition where kids hang empty socks or stockings above the fireplace or along the mantle, and they go to bed. The next morning, they come down and they look inside and they find presents. And one common thing for parents to do in order to get their, I'll say, unruly children to behave is they threaten the fact that the individual, most of the time it's Santa Claus, sometimes it's a different entity, but whoever is filling this sock with toys, if you were a bad kid, you will instead get coal in your stocking.
This happened to my uncle. There was one year he was so naughty that he got coal for Christmas.
That's so sad. I feel terrible for your uncle.
It's hard to even buy coal anymore.
Yeah, now it would probably be like charcoal biscuit, briquettes, or whatever they are, right? That's coal. You don't know what coal is. That's fine. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, so I really appreciated the fact that this flavor text not only called back to that holiday tradition, but it's also calling back to an extremely old magic card in Coal Golem. It's actually a artifact creature from the dark that, you know, it's a 3/3 creature for 5 that you can sacrifice it to add 3 red mana to your mana pool, which is extremely flavorful because you're burning the coal.
Makes sense.
I believe it's the only magic card with the word coal in its name, so it was our only choice.
That is interesting. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was a good choice anyway.
Yeah.
I just like imagining a kid coming down sock of presents.
What about charcoal diamond?
Yeah, that's not right. Really.
I'm totally a coal hauler swine.
Coal hauler
that's
swine.
A good one.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, my God. Now I'm picturing like a bunch of swine.
So all right, it was the most appropriate choice.
Good
most
save.
Appropriate, there you go. Good save. Well, okay, if you were going to put a booster in, do you obviously put in the most flavorful booster? Do you put in the Dark or Fallen Empires?
And I was so tempted to like buy a bunch of old booster packs of the Dark just so I had a chance of getting a Coal Golem, but then it turned out I was too lazy to do that.
I would probably just put Unglued in, but...
Oh, yeah. No, that seems good. Of course, you could do the sort of power option and put Modern Masters in.
Yeah, but that's if you were good. That's if you were a good kid.
I have Stalking Tiger in my cube, and I have some booster packs like in the cube box. And so, but the booster packs are all from sets that I worked on. So,
which ones are we talking about here? What do you got?
Let's see. Gate Crash.
Right.
Magic 2013.
Ooh, that's good.
Theros.
Mm-hmm.
Horn of the Gods, Journey into Nyx. I think that's it as far as a booster pack so far. Pretty soon I'll get to add Fate Reforged to that list.
So, let me ask Ethan. Let me ask you this, and I'm gonna have to have you pick out your favorite child. But between Gate Crash, where you had your mechanic that more or less helped you win the Great Designer Search to actually see print relatively unchanged, right? And Journey into Nyx, which was, I believe, your first lead design, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which one of those two do you think holds like a higher level in your heart, or like which experience for you was better as a player who became a designer?
Oh, well, definitely Journey into Nyx. Leading a set is a whole nother ball game. It is a tremendous amount of work and very satisfying work, and I was running the show, you know? So that one was my set. Like, Gate Crash was Mark Rosewater's set and Mark Gottlieb's set and Dave Humphrey's set, and I certainly feel like I helped, but Journey into Nyx is mine.
All right.
So, coming back to these holiday cards, one thing that I have noticed in the past couple years is that, so when the holiday card first came out, the I'll say flavor of the card was very generic as far as holiday tropes were concerned. And in the past few years, we've had Naughty or Nice, we've had Stalking Tiger, and now we've had Mishra's Toy Workshop. And those three cards could be argued that they're leaning more towards a Christmas-esque type of flavor. So I was curious if this is, you know, something that Wizards is starting to maybe branch out and allow to have more direct flavor. Like maybe we'll see something like Sensei's Divining Dreidel or Menorah of Thanos or something like that, that plays into these other holidays, or if they're, you know, trying to stay more generic, like what's the general thought process there?
I think that we're certainly trying to aim more generic, but you know, as time goes on, the low hanging fruit gets picked, and we have to sort of edge closer and closer toward sort of more secular Christmas tropes and such. We're certainly not going to see, you know, the baby Jesus on one of these cards unless there's a big policy shift. And probably not any Hanukkah related things or Kwanzaa related things likely either.
What about Festivus?
Festivus? It's true. I worked on a project called Festivus. The holiday box that we release every year was codenamed Festivus.
That's amazing.
That is so perfect. That's awesome. That's awesome.
There were so many grievances that have been aired. Oh god.
Okay, so if anything, you might lean a little bit towards like the generic kind of, I don't want to say capitalistic Christmas, but that's basically what it is when you're, you know, it's all about buying gifts and having a good time. And
yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah, the point is we're trying not to make anybody feel excluded. Right. And obviously, you know, it's leaning a little Christmassy, I agree, especially in the last few years, but we try not to go too far in that direction.
I mean, you could have had something like extra glistening oil burns for 8 days. I mean, there's options here for Christmas. Oh, man. Yeah. I'm just saying.
There are some really funny ideas out there that we have, but I don't think we'll get them past the brand team.
Shake fist at them. Well, as long as we're talking about a supplemental thing, not part of the normal game, we mentioned Commander 2014, obviously my favorite supplemental set, because that flavor was everywhere, jam-packed with taste.
It was like everywhere. The only regret that we have was that the mechanics didn't allow much flavor text.
Yes. The Commander products tend towards rare cards, and rare cards tend to be a little on the complicated side.
Right.
Too many words.
Too many words.
All the words. So then I'm curious about this, because I see Modern Masters. I see these supplemental products that kind of have a flavor, which we saw with Conspiracy of, oh, this is Dax Jam, and it's slow bad, but not slow bad. It's his cousin, Frank. But I see this area that there is this option to show other stories and this other flavorful integration. So I'm curious about, will there be or is there talk of, oh, we're going to do a dual deck on a plane we haven't visited for a while, or we're going to see what the Llanowar Elves are doing for an Elves versus Goblin 2.0 in the year 2015. I'm curious if that has ever crossed or ever come up.
Certainly, the idea of a sort of flavor-inspired and flavor-based supplemental product is something we've been knocking around, and there are rumblings about that. It's something that I think that a lot of people on the writing team are very excited about, and the success of Commander 2014 and things like Conspiracy means that there's just more opportunities to make more products that are aimed at different audiences.
Right. And if they sell well, then, well, biscuits, great.
Exactly. If they sell well, it means there'll probably be more. So
good point.
It's a good sign.
So go buy it.
Yeah. If you like it, you should buy it.
Vote with your money. That's how it works. Welcome to America. Mm-hmm.
I know that there was a large group of Orthoses out there who were extremely happy with Commander 2014, and I mean the amount of chatter alone that was going on Reddit and Twitter, just when, you know, Teferi was spoiled and Fraelys, and it was people were freaking out because they thought that Sarah was going to be there, and then they were like, oh, we're disappointed, but then we got, you know, Nahiri, so everyone, like, you know, you were sad, but then super excited anyway. So it was just so chock full of just Vorthos goodies. It was awesome.
Yeah, that really pleases me, because if the Vorthoses didn't like it, then it would just be a total failure, because it was for them.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Okay, so if these even the supplemental products are getting this fusion, this flavorful interaction, which is great, we don't have a base anymore. Corsets are, you know, soon to be gone.
That's right.
So the idea of card name, card art, card flavor seems like it has to be more than it has been in the past, because books aren't being printed. Do you feel that there's often a design challenge that you have to go through of, yeah, I need a cool design. Yeah, we need to do some neat mechanics with this too. But also, you know, we need to have more depth, because we don't have that extra netting that we used to have.
I don't know. I guess I feel like we're moving forward into this new world where we're kind of doing things differently with our new two-block model. We're going to try some different ways of telling stories that I can't really say anything specific about, but it sort of creates different challenges and different opportunities for me as a game designer. You know, how can I help tell that story through my designs? I don't want to tease too much, but I think you guys will like the direction that we're going with the sets going forward.
It's almost like flavor hyperdrive of, oh, there's a new set. Bah! Ah! Thing happened. Someone died. Something new.
Yeah,
ah!
I really I like that it seems like each set has been much more driven by like an overall flavor. Tarkir, obviously the flavor of the set is that, you know, you're trying to get across the fact that it's a plane that's just ravaged by war, and literally every mechanic for every clan is just like an outpouring of, like, yes, we are at war. They're very combat oriented. Like, every turn, most likely you're going to be attacking with something. And that really kind of shows you the flavor of that plane through playing the game, which I'm a huge fan of.
Okay. So Ethan, on this, no corset, things are moving more rapidly in set changes, in flavor, in story, even in design, I'm guessing, in some cases. Will there be a need for more setty neutral names on cards, so it's not tied necessarily to a plane for reprints? Or is it almost a switch you guys have had to do in design to say, homie, we're making new all the time. Lot of War Elves 47, 80 different ways, we're going to do it. I mean, has that changed, or hasn't quite come up yet?
Well, I guess there's sort of two different types of cards. There are cards that we don't really want multiple different versions of out there. Like, we wouldn't want two different versions of a Shockland out there, right? Ravnica dual lands.
Yeah.
So, fortunately, those have relatively generic names. So if we wanted to reprint those somewhere, we probably could. Another thing is, maybe we don't want two versions of a card in standard. Like, maybe it's fine out there in the rest of Magic, but having two rampant growths in standard might be too many.
That'd be bad.
So those things kind of want to have generic names. So if we want to put them in two sets, they won't have a negative impact on Constructed. But we're reasonably comfortable with doing what we call functional reprints, which is a card that has the same casting cost, the same type, the same rules text, but has a different name. And we're not too worried about doing that, especially with common and uncommon cards.
Now, when you're going about doing a functional reprint, do you guys make a point to try and make sure that the flavor of that card is different from its previous printing? So, for example, if you had a card that, let's say, was like a fire spell, then if you're doing a functional reprint, would you guys try to make it, let's say, like a lightning spell?
It sounds like maybe you're talking about Searing Spear and Lightning Blast.
I might be.
maybe. Nothing.
Is Lightning Blast the name of that card?
Am I getting that right? I think it's... No, Lightning Blast is the one that deals 4 damage and has like a Minotaur getting electrocuted.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I only know the cards from the art.
Lightning Strike.
I think it's Lightning Strike, Lightning Strike and Flaming Spear are the two. Yes.
All right. So in that particular instance, That was not really a deliberate exactly. It was like we knew we had a burn spell here. We knew we wanted to show Karanos throwing a lightning bolt, and we had a design that was different from Flaming Spear. But then as we play tested, it became clear to development that, oh, it really needs to be 1R instant DL3, and that's what it needs to be. But by that point, the art was already in. So, like, you can't just be like, oh, this is Searing Spear.
Lightning sears lightning you. Spear. We'll shove it in the flavor text. It'll be fine.
Right. And it's like we can't give it the same name as the other one because the art has a lightning bolt, right? It has Karanos throwing lightning. And so we just decide to make that one a functional reprint. So it happens sometimes. It's not a clean and straightforward thing because all these different things are happening in parallel.
Right.
And sometimes you just end up with a functional reprint that nobody asked for.
So do you have a short list of functional reprints you would love to do in Everwind Magical Christmas Land?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't really think of it like that. For me, putting in a reprint of something, if it's not a functional reprint, if it's like a straight reprint, then it has to be like the perfect fusion of function and flavor that fits right in this set and is great here. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this card. It feels like it was made for this set. Like there was this torch equipment. Was it Blazing Torch?
Oh yeah, from Zendikar.
From Zendikar. Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, we should put this in Innistrad because it's perfect. It makes it it's this top down card. The equipped creature can't be blocked by vampires or zombies.
Boom.
And so we put it into Innistrad. And at some point, Brady, who was the head of creative, came to Mark Rosewater and was like, oh, can we change it to be vampires, zombies, or werewolves? And Mark was like, no, it's too late. It's a reprint. It was so perfect that Brady didn't even realize it was a reprint.
Oh, wow.
So
that's got to almost feel like cheating. Like, it's so good that you don't...
It feels great. It feels great. It's just like, oh, the puzzle piece just fit right in there. It was there the whole time.
It's like you add a new artwork and you're like, oh, biscuits, this card from Portal 2. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's going to be the coolest feeling.
Yeah, but as far as functional reprints go, no, I don't really have a list of things that I'd like to reprint with a different name. It's not really something that I think
Rock
about.
Rock of Ridges. 4-drop, 3/3 flyer.
I can't. It's on the reserve list.
I know it is. But it's one of those strange cards that's like, you know, this could exist in present day, but it's reserved.
The one that kills us is, that spirit from Legends. Thunder Spirit. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
We keep wanting to print a card that is, one and a white and a white for a 2/2 flying first strike creature.
So perfect.
We're just like, this would make a great call, and then somebody's like, no, it's on the reserve list. Oh, jeez.
Son of a...
And for you guys out there who don't know, the reserve list is this policy from way back where they can't print, what is it, it's like 80% of
rare.
Each
it's
old
It's a bunch
set,
of rare
right?
cards from yep. from the first 6 years of Magic that we swore an oath never to reprint because...
Right, but the way that it works is you can't reprint them, but you also cannot create functional reprints.
That's right.
Them.
That would be cheating.
Right. So that's where the problem comes in that you create a card where you're like, oh, this is perfect, and someone's like, well, it's a functional reprint of this card that's on the reserve list, so...
Well...
Too bad.
They did... I mean, Reverberate did get printed, so, I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
You know.
We probably wouldn't do that today.
No.
That's
not
a little too close to Fork, I believe.
Right.
Correct, yeah. Huh, that's super cool. I mean, I look at the reserve list often to see the art that is on them, because those are some of the throwback things that people, you know, they played with the rares back in the mid-90s, and those are the cards often that can't be reprinted. So whenever I see any sort of tie-in, I immediately... think of, okay, what's on the reserve list? That's like, oh, this is a reference to this thing to bring this mini nostalgia back without, you know, having the uncomfortable ickiness of jumping into the reserve list, which can get scary quickly.
Mm-hmm. So, Ethan, do you consider yourself to be a Vorthos? Like, are you really a diehard kind of flavor fan in Magic?
Well, I don't think I'm a hardcore Vorthos. I've been playing the game since the beginning. And, you know, as I said, I mostly experience the game through the cards. I love art. I've always been into art. And, you know, I enjoy flavor text, especially if Jaya Ballard is saying it.
Right.
Amen.
But, you know, I never got into reading the novels or any of the, you know, serious storyline interest. Okay. But, you know, I'm generally aware of the Magic storyline as it's unfolded over the years. So it's you know, be irresponsible for me to be totally unaware given my job.
Right. So would you say that Jaya is your favorite, or like, do you have a favorite character in the...
Oh yeah, I love Jaya. Yeah.
She's great.
I was really sad that we weren't able to squeeze her into Commander 2014.
Which everyone thought was coming.
We did. We thought it was possible. But, I mean, see, that, Mike, is comedy done correctly on flavor text.
Yeah, there you go.
Gorilla Titan is not. Jaya Ballard, awesome.
Fair.
Both written by the same person.
No, is she? She's written by Mark, too?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Really?
I think so.
Wow.
I think he wrote her. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm pretty sure he did.
I'm gonna have to ask him on Blogatog tomorrow.
Do it up.
All right.
I'm gonna have to, because right now I just know him for the banana thing, which is surprising for how much he hates bananas. He wrote a banana related flavor text that is just like But then also, what's the other one? Werebear. The right to bear arms, right? I was just like,
this one's so driving.
I remember opening those cards as a kid, and I was just like, what is going on? Like, and this, it was full, like, I'm like, this set was crazy. It felt like an unset. It was full of squirrels, which I actually liked. I wasn't, you know, that to me wasn't a bad thing, but some of the flavor was just like, what is happening here?
Like, yeah, I think Mark was running the creative team during that block, so he got to stuff all over.
Probably did half the things back then, too. Well, Ethan, I got a question. Holiday's coming up here. Quiet time. Are you going to be able to play Magic with any family members when you get back into it, or are you going to be teaching folks with intro decks and such?
I'm really hoping that I got an extra copy of each of the Commander 2014 decks. I'm hoping to get them sleeved up. My parents and my brother are going to come visit. I'm hoping I can get them to sit down and play a good game of multiplayer Commander with me.
Well, do awesome. They all play? They all already play Magic?
No. My brother played a little bit back in the early 90s, and I've gotten my parents to play a couple of times, but maybe this will be the one that really hooks them, you know?
Just throw them right into that multiplayer madness.
Yeah.
Okay. What about your kids? Do they play Magic?
Henry, my 13-year-old plays. He has a Magic deck that he brings in his backpack every day to school, so he plays. Alec, my oldest boy, doesn't really play very much. Every once in a while, we'll play some Commander, and he'll use my Norrin the Wary deck to sow chaos. And Zot is my youngest kid. He's not quite super interested in it. He's kind of at the stage where, you know, he casts lightning bolts on someone's face at turn one and hasn't quite got an interest in the strategic depth of the game.
Right. But that's all right. If he's having fun, I mean, that's all that matters.
Yeah, he has fun when he does it, but he never asks to do it, you know?
Right.
You don't want to push them too hard, because then they end up, you know...
Disliking it.
Hating it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you... Do you I know that Mark Rosewater, one of the things that he like loves to do on his blog is try to give different, I don't know, TV personalities or whatever, comic book heroes, like a certain color combination, right? That kind of speaks to who they are as a character. So do you personally have your own color combination or single color?
I'm more of a combination. I think I'm green-blue. You know, I'm very interested in learning, and, you know, have a you know, an intellectual attitude, but I also have a very sort of serene, you know, philosophy. I tend to take things easy, and the universe will unfold as it should. So that's sort of the green aspect of me.
So if you're a simic guy, I wrote an article on this like a bajillion years ago of magic and love, one of the few things that the game never can do enough because, you know, it's fighting and things. What would your wife be? Is she also a simic personality?
Oh, no, I think she's Rakdos.
Nice.
makes things exciting.
That's me. That's awesome.
Oh, that's great.
That's good. Hey, opposites attract.
Fair enough. I mean, that had some imagery for fans listening. That's great. Nailed it. Oh, that's fantastic.
Mike, what are you? I don't think we've ever talked about this. What do you think you are?
Sure. No, I was going to write a big thing on this, on how our colors change in our lives. I felt myself at one time to be very, very Golgari being. I was an athlete by nature and very, very competitive. But it's changed. I almost went from a Golgari to a Jund to Naya as I'm getting older, and I'm shedding more and more of any sort of like black or red influence, even though it's the creative side. But I'm feeling more like of a Selesnya community-based thing the more I write about things, and often the less magic I play on a weekly basis. It's a strange thing, and I wonder about that. A question for Ethan on that is, do you see people that kind of grow with the game, that, you know, their philosophy changes and even their deck preference changes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, certainly I can see it in myself. I've been playing for over 20 years now, sure. And I'm a very different person from who I was back when I was in high school. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to judge very many other Magic players. I don't have a history with other Magic players the way some of the other people in R&D do. You know, a lot of them, you know, played on teams together back in the days of yore, whereas I was always just, you know, involved in very local communities. You know, the guys in my dorm or
rubber bands folks, around cards.
The folks at the bookstore where I worked. Like, we had a league at my bookstore where I worked in Portland. I was never involved in sort of the larger Magic world as far as playing with people goes.
So when the Great Designer Search 2, when that came around, were you... Because I know there are a lot of people out there who are actively pursuing a career in, you know, game design and maybe even more, right, becoming you, even more specifically, they want to work for Wizards and they want to work on Magic. Was that something that you in your life you were kind of doing? Like, were you pursuing that career, or did you just see that contest and say, hey, I'll give it a shot?
It was definitely a, hey, I'll give it a shot thing. I was pursuing a career as an animator. I had just finished up a degree at the Art Institute of Portland studying animation and, you know, did a little bit of freelance work and was doing a little freelance web design on the side, trying to, you know, work with Flash to build websites as well as animate. And it was just sort of like, oh, I'd feel really like a loser if I didn't at least try to enter this contest. And I entered it. I did really well. And I was like, all right, well, you know what's even more fun than animation? Game design. And I can go work on my favorite game. All right, I'm just going to do that. So I am very happy with how things turned out, but it was certainly nothing that I was planning to do, right?
I actually knew about the animation, and I should have written this down. There are more animations in Duels of the Planeswalkers than ever before, and there's the little cutscenes mm-hmm. and things, which are so cute. I love them. Do you ever get to sit in on some of those creative discussions, or if those things get outsourced, and how does that all roll through? Because it's not a card art, it's not a marketing product, it's this kind of other thing.
I have had very little involvement in that, despite my experience. I was Yeah, I think I helped with the storyboarding for Theros' trailer a little bit, but in general, I've sort of devoted my energies to game design for the most part. Yeah, a lot of that happens over in the creative department. Jeremy Jarvis is always very involved, and Colin Kawakami and others over there. Right. And the actual animation is outsourced to a different company, but the art team and the writing team are very involved in the script and storyboards and sort of overseeing the production.
Cool. Well, Ant, you got the best question of the day coming up here, and I'm excited about it.
Which one?
The most important question.
Oh.
The OG Planeswalker, the original gangster. Gosh.
Okay. So that's, I totally forgot about this.
Is the OG? We
want to know, just as Vorthos's, if there is any hope to see a resurrection of Urza at all in the storyline, or maybe in a supplemental product or something. I mean, you guys teased us with Urza. I mean, it was the Coalition versus Phyrexian, that dual deck, but really it was Urza versus the Phyrexians. So
yep.
Is that still something that's kind of floated around in creative or R&D, or
even in a design sense, to be like something Urza related, or is it just put to bed like Phyrexia being dead?
Let me just, Phyrexia is not dead anymore, so, you know.
Well.
Yawgmoth is dead.
Yawgmoth is dead.
Let me just put it this way. I tend to do a lot of research as part of my job, and sitting right next to my bed is a book called Planeswalker by Lynn Abbey, which is all about Urza.
Yep.
So, as sort of the new generation of magic designers, I'm reading about Urza and finding out about Urza, and maybe nothing will come of it, but, you know, if something does come of it, I will be ready.
Nice. Ethan's dropping spoilers! Urza's back! Toon Lock's out! Come in! Turn it on snack time! Oh my god.
What is the thing that they say whenever Mark says something stupid on Blog Talk? They're like, spoiler confirmed, like, next set. Urza, next set, confirmed on Blog Talk.
Not anytime soon. But
but that's okay.
About it.
At least the seed has been planted, and you know, you now have knowledge of Urza.
That's right.
And you're learning about him.
Yeah.
And how amazing
he
is.
Didn't just have a pair of glasses and a pair of sunglasses. He was also strangely uncommunicative.
Oddly.
But yeah. So, you know, I'm digging in. I'm always trying to find interesting angles for things we might do in the future. And so there's some big names out there. There's Urza, there's Yawgmoth. Those guys are important. And maybe someday we'll want to do something with them eventually.
Maybe there'll be a commander set where, I don't know, there's a legend that happens to be Yawgmoth or something like that. I mean,
yeah, that was what I wanted for the Black Legend in C14. I was like, let's put Yawgmoth in here.
My head would have probably exploded.
Oh my god,
if that
it
happened.
Would have been sweet. But Jisa and Giralf were totally awesome.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I was really happy once they came around. I think I was happier than them than I would have been with Yawgmoth, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah. I would agree. I mean, players wanted it, didn't they? I mean, wasn't that the big thing of like,
yeah.
Hey,
they were bugging us all the time. How come you didn't put Jisa and Giralf in Innistrad block?
Just straight up, why you got me like that?
We didn't know that you liked them until it was way too late. And I was like, all right, we gotta fix this. So, and I love that art. Carla Ortiz is insanely awesome.
Yeah, she's silly. She's silly talented at this.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's amazing.
I mean, what's not to love about a ghoul caller wearing a black stained wedding dress? Like, it's just,
right. What?
It's crazy. It's so good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, this has been fantastic, Ethan. Thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun, guys. Thanks for inviting me on.
Definitely. We'd love to have you as many times as you'd want to come back and share your wisdom.
All right, next time I do something amazingly Vorthos-y, you let me know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Well, okay, so say someone's listening and they're like, who's this Ethan guy? How can they find you?
All right. Well, the best place to find me, I have a few articles on the Wizards.com website, if you want to hear the words straight from my brain, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ethan Fleischer. That's ETHANFLEISCHER.
Nice. And wonderful. Mike, where can they find you?
You can find me. I write every Wednesday at GatheringMagic.com. And you can find me at Vorthos Mike, or mainly any art magic posting online. Invariably, I'm there. And Ant, where are we going to find you?
So you can find me on Twitter at AntMTG and also on Gathering Magic, where I also write mostly a weekly column. I've been been slacking slightly. I've been recording. I know it's terrible, but I've been trying to get this podcast not sounding like we're in caves. So,
well,
hopefully I've tackled that. But yeah, I mean, that's where you can find me. And also, quick final question, Ethan, will you be at PAX East this year?
Oh, I don't usually go, but I think maybe I'll go this year.
Can I entice you to go with a snack time snack?
What if we bring snacks?
Because I'm going to be bringing snack time snacks and handing them out at PAX East.
True.
Yeah, I will probably go this year.
Confirmed, Ethan will be at PAX East this year.
There was some reason I was supposed to go. Wait, PAX East? Wait, where is the PAX? No, I go to PAX Prime.
No,
PAX East. PAX East is way out.
It's in
Boston.
Yeah, it's in Boston.
Oh yeah.
I'm not.
I'm not gonna fly all the way.
All right. Well, I am going to give Mark Rosewater because he normally goes to PAX East, correct? Because you guys have a panel there, I believe.
He definitely does some sort of PAX panel at some sort of PAX. I can't keep all the PAXes straight. I didn't even know which one was which.
I'm pretty sure that PAX East is the panel where you guys announce your next fall set. Like, you just put up the spoiler image.
Yeah, that sounds
so
great.
Because it's in March, and that's the most normal time. Because you talk about...
Right, Mark flies out there, and Mark Purvis, and Doug usually goes.
Yes, and Doug. So I am going to give Mark Rosewater a snack time snack that is especially for you.
Oh, thank you.
So if you do not get it, it's because he ate it.
Yep, there you go.
All right, I'll know.
So you will know. All right. Well, again, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on Snack Time. And guys, I hope you really enjoyed our special holiday episode, and we'll talk to you soon.